Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
And indeed, here we go. We've got our final hour here today. Glad you are with us. If you've got a question for Dr. Umat or Dr. Mixon, all you need to do is call us. And you can do that at 1-888-312-5757. That's 1-888-312-5757. A quick reminder that Dr. Umat has her own show starting again. Well, we started last week, but it's every Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. It's called Beautiful You. It's on a different station, but that's okay. You can find out where we are. You probably already have a hunch. And it's where we are usually every morning, in fact, every Saturday morning from 8 to 10. So it's Beautiful You.
That's
with
right.
Beautiful You, Dr. Samara Umat, from 1 to 2. And it is sponsored, of course, by Bellamedica, which is the longevity division dealing with all of our aesthetics.
That's right.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Bellamedica. Bella, beautiful.
Yes.
Medica.
Mm-hmm.
Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful medicine. Bellamedica.com if you would like just some more information. And this afternoon, you'll be talking a lot about hair restoration, fillers, Botox, things
That's
like
right.
that. It'll
mm-hmm.
be fascinating.
PRP,
so
yeah.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's get back to taking some more calls. We can go now to Brad. Brad in Shoreline, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I was watching an online health summit. There was a speaker talking about fasting and all the benefits of it. And then he said that in the morning he takes a greens mix and then doesn't eat for about 3 hours later. And he was trying to claim that that was still fasting. And that's like 25 to 100 calories in those greens mixes. And I know that you, Dr. Mason, have said that you like to stop eating around 2:30. But then you said that you take your vitamin packets before you go to bed that have those
yep.
at least two of those big fish oil supplements that have to have at least 15 calories in them. So I'm wondering how many calories can you consume during what is considered a fast, and does it matter what those calories are to still get the benefits of that fasting period?
Okay. Fasting has got as many definitions as there are people making recommendations for fasting. There are people that, you know, don't eat for 24 hours once a week. There are people that go 2 days a week with no food at all, but that do drink water.
Uh-huh.
Some people will drink water, coffee, and tea.
That's right.
They're non-calorie. For me, I get up each morning and I have a robust breakfast. My wife fixes me, omelets, pancakes, all kinds of good stuff for my breakfast. But then I generally wake up my daughter, let my food settle a bit, and then I go out and I run a few miles. I do a little weightlifting. And so I often burn most of my breakfast by the time I finish my morning workout. And so, I'm effectively hypocaloric until lunch. I tend to have a bit of a late lunch, but once more, I have a nice, big, robust lunch. I fill my tummy. I eat pretty much anything and everything I feel like, but then I don't have another meal. Although, once in a while, my wife loves to make me feel good, so she will sometimes fix me a latte or something, you know, an iced coffee on a hot day as I'm sitting out on the deck in the evening. And yes, I take my omegas with my evening supplements. Calorie intake from all of that is pretty darn low. You know, I'm probably consuming less than 100, 150 calories between my coffee, my evening coffee, and my supplements. But, you know, I'm 6'4", 200 pounds, pretty good muscle mass. I need to eat 25 to 2,800 calories a day just to keep from losing weight.
Okay. Yeah, and then you're absolutely right. Intermittent fasting really basically means whatever you can do, and there are many different definitions of it. Most people who talk about fasting talk about decreasing the hours in the day that you are eating, which is effectively what you just said.
Yeah.
It's difficult to not have anything. So like you said, some people will allow water. Some people do allow coffee. It can be black. And sometimes if you need a little bit of cream, cream is also okay.
Sure.
Some other advocates will also say, you know, if you're getting hungry, you can drink some broth. So bone broth or chicken broth or even vegetable broth for that matter has some protein in it. It is a clear liquid. It does have some calories, and you can spice it up with pepper or salt or whatever you like, but it is also considered part of a fast. The point being, it's not a food calories that you're taking.
The trick is to be hypocaloric for some period of time. And the longer you can go with fewer calories than your body is burning, the more effective the fast tends to be at altering your metabolism.
That's right.
Lowering your blood sugar, decreasing your insulin needs, actually shifting you away from pro-inflammatory to anti-inflammatory
right.
immune response, so that you do a better job of finding and killing cancer cells. There's something about being overfed or fed too frequently that turns out is not as good for us as you would think. And, you know, if you think about how human beings evolved, we did not come into this world in a society with grocery stores and farms and, mm-hmm. and plentiful food. Mm-hmm. Our ancestors were basically not just hunter-gatherers, but they were hunter-gatherer scavengers. We didn't have very good teeth and claws. And so we couldn't fight for our food with very many other animals. Even small dogs will chew up a human being most of the time, especially when they come in packs. So we basically went long, our ancestors went long periods of time without eating. And whenever we had food, we ate our fill. We got everything we could, but then we'd go without eating for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that was especially true in the wintertime. And so our metabolisms actually evolved, were designed for intermittent eating. You know, we talk about intermittent fasting because for us, staying, having a full tummy all the time has become our cultural norm.
Norm, yeah, exactly.
But the reality is human beings were designed to be intermittent eaters, mm-hmm. not intermittent fasters. It's just that we are spoiled.
Yeah.
And I like my full tummy. You know, and I enjoy food. I think, you know, life is not to be endured. It is to be enjoyed. And
not true. There are so many attractions everywhere. And then, you know, most people don't know when to stop.
Yes.
It's very hard. And if you put, you know, well, your nice food's right in front of you, or you're walking by or driving and there's the aroma or the aura or the commercial that you're watching, of course you're tempted. And it's hard to give in.
You know, my wife, of course, was raised in China in the 70s and early 80s. And she, you know, she was told to, you know, eat everything in your bowl and think of the starving workers in America.
Sure. starving workers in America?
Oh, yes. Sure.
What?
Yeah. She was told some really outrageous stuff about America when she was growing up because the socialist government hated America.
Hmm.
You know, for instance, American businessmen got their black shoes from the skins of black workers.
Serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, this was, talk about really, really dissing us.
Wow.
So, yes, and they heard about the starving workers in America because they didn't have the virtues of the communist system to protect them.
Hmm.
So
that is, you know, so rich.
Yeah, whereas we were told to think of the starving children in China. Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
60 million people did starve to death in China in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. So, you know. But yes, we are not designed to eat three times a day. We just aren't. Our bodies do better if we eat less frequently.
So it is.
Okay. Well, another person was saying that one of the biggest benefits of fasting is that if your body isn't having to focus on digestion, then it can go out and focus mm-hmm. on healing the body. So I'm wondering then, is you saying that taking like the fish oil supplements or the latte or greens mix is going to take so little digestion that yes. it would not impact that?
That's basically true, yeah. You know, there's been an observation for decades that heart attacks frequently occur after a large meal. You go for Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays where people eat great big feasts and then they keel over with their heart attack. You're shunting your blood supply to your gut.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you're eating less, you're having more time in which the blood supply is not diverted to a large degree to the bowel. It's up in the rest of your body and your brain. And, you know, almost every religious tradition throughout history
yeah.
has a tradition of fasting to develop spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Your focus and your thoughts are not always on your next meal. There's this tradition in Christianity and Judaism and Islam and Hindu and Shinto. And I mean, every religion that I am familiar with has a fasting tradition as part of its spirituality.
Okay, so would it matter if, like, the sugar content is higher, if that might, like, spike?
Yes.
Insulin?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, sure. Yes, it does. Yeah. Part of the benefit of a intermittent fast is trying to decrease your insulin resistance and allow your body to use your sugars more efficiently. Yes.
So if you eat sugar, it's not good.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate the call. Very interesting conversation. And we're going to have more of those conversations as soon as we come back. For example, Marianne has a question about thrush and lip fungus. Ouch. And then Bonnie has a question about statins and another question about COVID. Richard has a question about shingles, as does Lynn. So shingles, we've talked about that a couple of times today already. So don't go far. We'll be right back.
I'm in the longevity program in Linwood with Dr. Armstrong, and I'm very happy. And one of the things I realized why it's being very successful for me is that I feel like I have a personal coach.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark. It was Staggerly and Billy.
20 minutes past the hour while Pat Boone sings Staggerly. Had dinner with him in his home in Beverly Hills 2 weeks ago. Kind of fun. All right, let us start taking some more calls. Let us go to Gig Harbor and talk with Marianne. Marianne, we're glad you called.
Thank you. I am a 74-year-old blessed with wonderful health female who's seen the doctor more in the last 5 months than I have in the last 10 years. March, I ordered some sensitive toothpaste during COVID because my mouth felt sensitive. In May, I ordered some sunblock because my lips were dry and I was concerned about protecting them. And in June, I was diagnosed, despite the two shingles shots, with a light case of shingles, which may or may not be related. And then I began doctoring for the mouth and lips, and a dermatologist said fungus on the lips and gave me cortisone cream. And then I saw an internist because of the sore mouth and was diagnosed with thrush and given 5 times a day some lozenges that I don't remember the name of. And things didn't get better. So now I just finished 2 weeks of an antifungal medication called fluconazole. Mm-hmm. And things are better, but not pure gone. And I've been reading a little, and my friends have suggested maybe some blood work. And I'm just wondering what the doctors think about what's going on with me.
Something has significantly diminished your immune response.
That's right.
Healthy people don't get that many fungal. And mm-hmm. you know, fungi are generally pretty benign to human beings. We get them in our toenails because there's not much of a blood supply there. You know, women can get yeast in the vagina, especially if they lose the acidity for some reason. For instance, if their estrogen drops or their sugars are too high. But other than the toenails and vaginas, we don't get much in the way of infections from fungi. Maybe a little.
Oral thrush occurs, you know, if you're not taking care of your hygiene or you're immunocompromised or you're on steroids for a long period of time. So those can be some predisposing risk factors.
None of those describe me, to my knowledge.
So the question is, what's knocking down your immune response?
So
the fluconazole, itraconazole, any of those antifungal drugs are probably perfectly appropriate to try to get rid of. You may need more than 2 weeks. Fungi are not animals. They're closer to plants than animals. Okay. You know, you can shoot an animal and it dies. You shoot a tree and it just keeps right on growing. And so what we normally think of antibiotic therapies with fungi are not really applicable. So sometimes it takes weeks or even months to clear a fungus infection. Mm. So I, you know, talk to your doctor about maybe continuing that for another 2 or 3 weeks.
I had a friend sent me an article that said there's some post-COVID, which I have not been tested for, nor do I have any reason to believe I had. And it showed pictures of the cracked dry lips and mentioned the thrush also. So, of course, that mm-hmm. occurred to me.
Sure. And that actually occurred to me while you were talking, too. I would like to get both a COVID a PCR and an antibody test. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do them both.
That's
actually
what I was wondering.
Because there are neurologic and oral people get altered taste, altered smell is a very, very common with COVID infections. Mm. So, you know, that is a possibility. I'd put it probably down, not real, real likely, but, you know, given we're in a pandemic, why not test for it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the advice.
All right, my dear.
Yeah, good luck.
You betcha.
Good luck.
Thank you, Marianne. Let's go to Edmonds and talk with Bonnie. Mm-hmm. Hey, Bonnie, we're glad you called, too.
Thank you. Say, I'll start off with the simpler question. I was at a dinner party in the backyard of some friend's home, and one of the young gals in her mid-20s, and her boyfriend, her brother had COVID, and he was quarantined for 14 days. And then he wanted to give me a hug, and I said, "No, I don't think so." And he says, "Well, I can't give it to you. Can they be a carrier, even though they have no more symptoms?"
Not likely. If he had overt COVID and has been 14 days and he's symptom-free, he's not likely to give it to anybody. So, you know, I understand everybody is a little nervous about COVID, especially, you know, people over 50.
Yes.
So I understand your hesitance, you know. I wouldn't tag you as an anti-COVID bigot or anything, but...
Yeah.
Reality is he's probably just perfectly safe. But, you know, if you're uncomfortable, you're uncomfortable.
That's right.
And there's a lot of reasons not to hug other people. I mean, hell is... In my medical practice, I had a rule to never hug any female under 80. just because, you know, accusations can get made.
So, That's true. That's so true. Okay. My other question is, my partner has been on statins for many years, and when we got together about 7 years ago, I noticed that he had the prescription for it, and I've been trying to talk him out of them. And I just want to get your opinion on, or what I can say to him about it, because I think he's taking it for cholesterol, and I said, I don't think that's going to help.
Well, statins do lower cholesterol.
Yes, they do.
Because has he had a heart attack?
No.
Okay. Pretty much the literature is coming down in that statins are not effective at preventing first heart attacks. They are effective at preventing second heart attacks.
If you don't have a family history.
Yeah.
So if he has a family history or other risk factors, then it might lower his incidence of a stroke.
That's true.
So it depends upon why they give it to him.
Yeah. You know, if he's an otherwise healthy guy and he's not obese and, you know, his parents did not topple over in their 50s, he may not need it. But, you know, if his father and three uncles have all died in their mid-50s and...
He's overweight and
he's overweight,
a smoker or,
Or he's diabetic.
He's a drinker.
He's
a drinker. Okay, well, then the alcohol is more likely to kill him than the the cholesterol.
Than the statins?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, his stomach protrudes quite far out. And, I mean, he's not overweight. And I've talked to him about that, too, but you can only say so much, you know,
But if his belly is bulging, then what you're describing is someone with a lot of visceral fat.
That's right.
And that is the most dangerous form of fat. That increases his risk of dementia, heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, osteoarthritis. I mean, lots of bad stuff comes from that abdominal fat. So,
okay.
You know, all right.
I'm trying to get him to come in and do the free analysis.
Good. And then get him to join the clinic, and let's see if we can give him a flat, hard belly. How about that?
That sounds good. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, all right. Okay. Good luck to you. Take care. Okay.
Thank you, ma'am. Bonnie. Well, I'll tell you what. I think we better. Let's go to a break right now. About a half a minute early, but that's okay, because we don't want to interrupt the next caller. And the next caller is going to be Richard from Redmond, has a question about shingles. Lynn does as well from Seattle. And then Glenn has a question from Port Orchard about fasting. That's been a topic already today, so it has piqued some interest. So you don't go far. We'll be right back.
I think it's a wonderful thing. It teaches at the seminar, and not reacting after the problem. It's trying to prevent the problems from happening in the first place. And the thing I like the most about everything that I've learned is it all makes very logical and intuitive sense.
All right, we got a half an hour to go here. I've got Dr. Jerry Mixon, I've got Dr. Samira Umat, and of course this program, Leading Edge Medicine, is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinic. And we're having fun. In fact, we're taking a huge number of calls today, and let's just keep it rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Redmond and talk with Richard. Richard, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
Thank you for your service to the community. Hey, Jerry, you talked about getting the message in you're a kid that says eat everything on your plate because of all the poor, starving kids in China.
Yep.
I heard the best comeback I ever heard to that. A girl told me her dad told her that, and she said to him, name one.
I like that.
Oh, yeah,
that's good. That is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
kids are smart, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Well, she picked herself up off the floor after that, but.
Ouch.
Yeah, right. But I wanted to talk about the shingles. I had shingles, and I had it on the left side of my face. and one of your previous callers was complaining about the pain involved. When I went to Vietnam in 65, I had a cholera shot, and you have to carry a 77-pound duffel bag with you. That's painful.
Yep.
I've had the two Shingrix shots since I had my outbreak, and I had zero pain with the injections. Now, one of the things I will comment about, too, is I cared for a mother-in-law who was dying of pancreatic cancer, and I was the guy designated to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and give her shots in the stomach. And she told me, she said, "Richard, I want to tell you something." I said, "What is it, Mary?" She says, "You give the best shots of anybody, even the hospice care." And I said, "Well, Mary, I'm not in a hurry. I'm here to care for you, okay?" And I think the speed with which people run people through the shot mill makes a big difference.
A great point. I agree with you. Thank you for bringing that up. It is dependent on the injector.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Probably
exactly.
Is, yeah. Because mine stung a bit, but it wasn't bad. Mm. Pete's apparently was worse than mine, and the guy that called a while back said his was agonizing.
Terrible.
Well, the person doing mine, I think she was like 13 years old. She looked and she just jammed it in there. But, you know, a classic example, I think, of Dr. Brian McKay at Advanced Cosmetic and Laser Dentistry. I've been using him for the last 10 years or so. Prior to that, you know, when you get the shots of Novocaine?
Yeah.
That was always miserable. I hated it, and it was very painful. With Brian McKay, there is no pain. Maybe the teeniest of pricks, but he does it very slowly. You know, he just doesn't shove down the needle and shove that stuff into you. And so he does it the right way. He's got class and sensitivity, whatever. He actually cares about you not being in pain. So I think you're right. Mm-hmm. People need to be trained how to give those shots.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can also, I think as a recipient, you can also ask for a slow injection rather than a speedy injection.
True.
Good point.
Just a thought. And the 13-year-old Pete, did you touch her hair?
Did I touch her hair?
Wants to know if you're a Biden fan.
Oh, no.
Were you smelling her hair and rubbing her shoulders?
Oh, my gosh.
Guys.
I can't believe we said that out loud.
Yeah.
But, okay.
All right.
Anyway, thanks, Richard.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Seattle with another question about shingles, probably not from this perspective. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Hello, Lynn.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. So I had three questions about shingles. And if it's okay with you, I'll just ask it all at once to save time.
Okay.
So I was wondering why, at least it seems to me, that only pharmacists administer vaccines and not doctors, because my reservation with that is pharmacists are not doctors. So I don't know if that concern is warranted, but I do wonder about it. So that's the first question. And the second one was, last year I got the first shot in a series of two for the shingles, but I didn't follow through with the second shot. And there seems to be a limited amount of time to get that second shot. So if I decide to get the vaccine again, do I have to get the first vaccine all over again? And I'm wondering how I impacted my body by not getting the second shot. Now, if I do it again, I've got to get the first shot and the second shot. And the last question is, why is the most recent shingles vaccination done in two stages now?
That's a good question. What they're finding is that with the first one, there is an adjuvant that is often added that causes your body to be more receptive to the vaccine. And then the second shot, it gets a boost because the first shot had the adjuvant. If you go more than about 4 or 5, 6 months, or if you're going too long between, the adjuvant loses its potency in your body. And so you may not get quite as much of a boost from the second shot. Still, the second shot would be a lot better than not having had the second shot. So I'd go ahead and get it at some point. You know, I have not seen any studies on the Shingrix per se. I have seen studies on the HPV injections, the herpes papillomavirus that we're giving to prevent women from getting cervical cancers. And what they're finding is that even though two shots are recommended, one shot cuts the risk of getting the disease significantly. Two shots just adds about 25% more effectiveness. So, you know, one or two, one is better than none, mm-hmm. two is better than one, two reasonably close together is best of all, but, you know, you do what you can do. I wouldn't go back and restart with the first shot again.
So, and then her question was about injectors. She can should pharmacists. Yeah.
You know, that's mostly a matter of economics and legal scope of practice for each state. In many states, pharmacies have basically taken over the injections. But, you know, even when they were done almost always in doctors' offices, it was almost always the nurse, not the doctor, that mm-hmm. was giving it.
That's true.
That's right. Yeah. Or the medical assistants.
Yes. So the doctor almost never gave shots simply because he was busy doing higher income things. Mm-hmm. And he delegated that to the least expensive people in his office. And that was either the medical assistant or the nurse. And we've done that as a society. Injections are simple. There's not a whole lot you can do to hurt somebody. And so we have now delegated that down to the pharmacist. And who knows, we may be taking it to milkmen next. I have no idea.
So, I hope not, Jerry, okay?
So, actually, I'm not sure there are any more milkmen.
Well.
So thank you, doctors. So at this point, should I just, it's been a year, should I take the one, two shot again and just go for the second one?
I just go for the second one if it was me.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, my dear. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
All right. Let's go to Glenn in Port Orchard. Glenn, welcome to the show. Glenn, you need to turn off your radio, pal. Doggone it. We need you to listen to us, not the radio.
Hello? I got my radio down.
Yep, you're on the air.
Okay. Got a question on fasting. Many moons ago, when I was in like my mid-40s, I decided to go on a 10-day water fast only. First 3 days were rough, and after that, I had no desire to eat. I was jogging 3 miles a day before work, and when the mid-morning donuts came through around 10:30 to my office, I just rejected them, didn't even want to eat one. Well, what was interesting, on day seven, probably early morning of day eight, at about 2:30 a.m., I get up to urinate, and I went in, and when I urinated, it stunk so bad that it woke my wife up. We had to open the windows, put the fan on. She left the bedroom until it was safe and to come back in. And my question is, what would just trigger my body to give a core dump at one time? I always thought that fasting was an attenuation process and, you know, a slow detoxification. And is there some, was there some biological trigger in there that was building up a dam, and all of a sudden it just, the dam broke and all the damn stink come out?
I don't know. I can explain the first part of your discussion, and that's a very common phenomenon. People that go on very rigid diets who are either fasting or eating 600 calories a day or less often report that They're quite hungry for the first several days, and then about day three or four, hunger just goes away, and they feel great, and they've altered their metabolism, and they're just living off their fat stores pretty much.
That's right. So at this point in time, the body's now burning ketone bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's not burning sugar for energy, it's burning your stored fat, and that actually can be smelly.
Yep.
But why only the one time? And
I don't know.
That I have no idea.
Because ketones have a very distinct odor to them. I mean, it smells like a solvent. It's kind of a Swedish odd smell that ketones has. But
Swedish.
Yes, sweet.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
one
smells kind of sweet.
Smell was just, it was like rotting organic material. It just, yeah. I mean, it was just obnoxious. I mean, to wake yeah. up my wife, I mean, that, it had to yeah. travel all the way through our master bedroom and alert yeah, her.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before. So that's a new one on me. And so I.
Well, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I really can't explain
right.
it.
I will say I went 13 days without food. Back when I was in my early 30s, I was addicted to a nasal spray. And my doctor suggested the only thing I could break the hold on it was a fast. And it was pretty miserable for the first 2 days, maybe 3 days. But then, hey, I was playing tennis 4 or 5 times mm-hmm. a week.
Yep.
I had as much energy as I had ever had. And all yep. I had was, I had a water, which was 2/3 water, a little bit of orange juice, and a little bit of vinegar in a liquid that I drank,
mm-hmm.
kind of sipped it throughout the day, I guess for blood sugar reasons or what have you. It wasn't for energy, I don't think. But that's all I had, and it was fine. I had no hunger at all.
Yeah,
okay.
And that seems to happen a lot.
Mm.
But,
okay. So what happened to me was just kind of a phenomenon, I guess.
Yeah, just odd. Yeah, I can't explain it because it's not something that we typically see with people that go on a prolonged fast.
Okay. Well, I'll just have it be a mystery the rest of my life.
Sure. Well, it's just one of those many, many things that doctor doesn't know about.
All right. Thank you, Glenn. When we come back, we've got a question from Dennis about hydroxychloroquine, and then a question from Izzy from Redmond about relief factor. So don't go far. We'll be right back.
I've been a patient for about a year and a half. I'm impressed with the program, and I've gained a lot of benefits from it. I owe a lot to the longevity program. It's been great.
Everybody's going out and having fun. I'm just a fool for staying home and having none. I can't get over how she set me free.
Oh, lonesome me.
We don't want you lonesome. Let's go to Lakewood and talk with Dennis. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, sir.
With all the information we're getting about the COVID and all that kind of stuff, I'm curious what your opinion is about Dr. Simone Gold and the American Frontline Doctors and what they're saying about hydroxychloroquine.
Okay. I have some differences with Dr. Gold, but I think that what they're saying about the hydroxychloroquine is pretty much on track. You know, there's been a variety of studies. Interestingly, the most ballyhooed studies that said that it did no good and was in fact dangerous turned out to be fraudulent and had to be withdrawn by the medical journals.
Why didn't Fauci admit that? He's still quoting it.
Quoting which?
The fraudulent one, I thought.
Well, if he's quoting the fraudulent one, he's doing a bad thing.
Okay.
But there were two studies. One was just poorly done, and one was overtly fraudulent. And those were touted by the press a lot. Mm-hmm. I have not heard Dr. Fauci quote either of them per se. There have been other studies that said that it was quite beneficial and protective and that it cut the death rate by more than half when it was used in early hospitalized patients. That is, starting it when they first came in the hospital before they got too sick. And the group that did not get the hydroxychloroquine died at twice the rate of those that did get it. So, you know, that's impressive. So I've got a mix of studies, some saying yes and some saying no. Hydroxychloroquine's been around for 65 years. I took it as a young soldier in Vietnam. Every country on the planet that I'm aware of gives it to all of their soldiers and all of their State Department personnel that go to endemic areas where there's malaria.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's a very good anti-malarial drug to keep you from getting malaria. And so millions of people have taken the drug over 65 years. It has always been shown to be a safe drug. And we do have some kind of interesting findings. You know, it is in more recent years has been used for autoimmune diseases such as lupus. And interestingly, people that are taking it for lupus are not getting COVID. It seems to be protective against COVID in those lupus patients. And normally, people with autoimmune diseases
are more susceptible.
Are more susceptible to COVID.
Right.
They have faulty immune systems. And yet, those getting the hydroxychloroquine are having a very, very low incidence of infections. So I think it probably is very effective as a prophylactic drug. I think it is most likely effective against early onset, as when you take it very early in the course of the disease. I think it is pretty much worthless in seriously ill people. I'd go to remdesivir in a heartbeat rather than hydroxychloroquine if I were sick enough that I thought I was going to be going to the ICU, for instance.
Are doctors giving anybody static about remdesivir? Or is that pretty much standard of care now?
Well, it's just very expensive, and they don't have nearly enough of it out there.
And it's for hospitalized patients.
It's an intravenous drug.
Yeah.
So you can't exactly write prescriptions and say, go home and take it.
So there's not enough for everybody that needs it now?
That's right. Yeah, it's being manufactured, and, you know, there's a worldwide demand.
Yeah.
Because we got some studies saying that in very sick patients, it does cut the death rate and shorten hospital stays. But, you know, as far as the hydroxychloroquine goes, personally, if I thought I was catching COVID, if I started running a fever and getting a severe cough, I would take my hydroxychloroquine on that first day when I went to get my COVID test. I would not even wait for the results to come back. That's my personal situation, my personal judgment for me as a 73-year-old man, all right? I would start taking it as soon as I thought I might have COVID. I would wait for the test results to come back in order to decide whether to continue taking it or stop. So that's my best judgment if my own life is on the line.
Right, and I would do the same thing. It seems logical. How easy is it to get tested quickly right now?
It is not easy. The test, theoretically, can be done in a day. You can take the sample in the morning, run it. It takes a few hours to get the test back. The problem is that we have ramped up testing to such an extent that the labs are totally overwhelmed. And so the samples are taking a day or two to get there. They're slow getting it throughput because there's so much testing to be done. And then the results have got to get back to your doctor, because the law in most states won't let the lab tell you directly. You have to have wait and have the doctor tell you. So part of that is bureaucratic foolishness, and part of it is just the volume of testing we're doing.
Interesting. Is that going to get better soon?
Well, I hope so. I mean, the labs have a financial interest to ramp up testing. You know, I mean, they've got more testing than they can do, and they get paid for every test.
Sure.
So it is in their interest to gear up to the point that they can do lots and lots and lots of tests. But remember, the lab has only got so many employees, and you can't just drag somebody in off the street and say, you're a lab tech, start doing, you know.
Yeah.
These are polymerase chain reaction. This is a reasonably complex test. And there's only so many lab techs.
Okay.
And the lab techs are doing other testing. Remember, people are still sick with other diseases. And so you're talking about an incremental increase and only so much staff available to do it.
All right. Anything else, Dennis?
Yes, but I'll save that for another day. You've got more people waiting, so I'll let you guys go.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening and calling in. Let's go to Redmond and talk to Izzy. Hello, Izzy.
Hello, and thank you, Dennis. About a year ago, I was bent over like an old man. I could barely stand up straight, real heavy back pain. I dreaded going out to the mailbox even. It went for like 6 months or so. So
oh my goodness.
I started taking Relief Factor, and I've now been taking it for about a year. I also, at the same time, joined the longevity program. I'm going to sound like a commercial. I'm not getting paid for this. Within about a week, the back pain was all completely gone and everything. Now, I was at Pro Ortho. They did an MRI. I had a herniated disc. I had narrowing at the bottom base of the spine. So there was physical things they could see. But the Relief Factor, no more pain. I could now roll over in bed without waking up. All of this stuff. And it was just, it was great. And so I substituted the Relief Factor components for, you know, for the normal stuff on the longevity program, the Omega, the curcumin, resveratrol. And then my longevity doctor suggested I try this stuff called iThroid. I guess it's iodine.
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes.
Anyway,
yes, yeah.
Within hours of taking that, it was like the Relief Factor just completely was turned off. I was bent over, the exact same kind of pain. When I'd reach out to pick something up, it was painful. I couldn't roll over in bed. And so I took some Aleve, never took the iThroid again. Within a couple of days, I was back to normal again. The Relief Factor was working. My back wasn't painful anymore. But it was just like, it's like this iThroid just completely turned off the Relief Factor.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never seen a, you know, a paper or an article that would explain that.
So how often were you taking the iThroid?
I took only one. Well, she wanted me to take a half a dose of it, but it's a cap with oil in it, so I had to take a full dose.
Okay.
But I only took one. Of course, I take Relief Factor twice a day. And I just, you know, it was amazing. It was exactly the same pain, exactly the same situation. It was just like the Relief Factor was completely blown away.
Okay. I can't explain it, but obviously stay away from the iThroid.
Yeah.
Well, I was. She suggested maybe I try it once more just to make sure that's what it was, but I just didn't want to go through that again. One more thing, Dr. Mixon.
Yes, sir.
I've been depressed for the last couple of months from something you said on the radio.
Oh?
Because you were having a discussion of autoimmune disorders, and my doctor thinks that both my AFib and colitis are both a result of autoimmune problems. And what you said apparently about autoimmune kinds of stuff, as if there's just nothing you can do about it or whatever. And I've been depressed ever since.
All right. Okay, well, let me modify that slightly, because I
would
say that there's nothing you can do. What we have found, because we have a lot of people with autoimmune disorders that come to longevity, those that go on our program tend to have a lot less problems from their autoimmune disorders.
Yeah, I've seen it for a fact.
Yeah, and, you know, I can't say that we are treating it, because there's nothing specific that we're doing for that, and yet the people that go on our program and follow it tend to have a dramatic decrease in their autoimmune symptoms.
The anabolic hormones seem to make a huge difference.
They really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're triggering a lot of growth and healing factors and shifting the immune response to an anti-inflammatory instead of a pro-inflammatory pathways. And so, you know, that we can't cure autoimmune diseases. We don't make that claim. And yet in our clinic, doing what you're doing, we see an awful lot of people that get resolution of their symptoms. So, good news.
You're suggesting some dietary changes, and I'm not sure I can do all of them. I'd be miserable eating if I tried to do everything.
But you start doing what I can. Start somewhere and do what you can do. And then if you get that under control and things are going well, then try adding one more thing. You know, don't try to recreate the Taj Mahal in one fell swoop, you know.
Hey, Izzy, this is Pete. Any chance you would be willing to give our call screener, if I put you on hold, your phone number so I could give you a call maybe on Monday? I'd like to talk to you about your Relief Factor experience. Would you mind?
No problem.
I'm going to put you on hold right now, and then our call screener will get your name, Izzy, and your phone number, and I'll give you a call, because obviously we get lots of testimonials like you've given, and I'd like to ask you a quick question or two. So we'll do that. Thank you, Izzy. It's always fun hearing those stories. We've got lots of them. All right. Well, it has been 4 hours of Longevity Medical Clinic's radio program, Leading Edge Medicine. Thank you for being with us today. Don't forget, if you want one of those free health analysis appointments, there may be a few left, at least in Linwood. So you go to our website, lmclinic.com, and make that appointment. And we would be happy to see you in here for one of those free health analysis appointments. You get two free tests. You get the blood test. You also get the special in-body test. Really amazing stuff. We hope you'll do that again at lmclinic.com. Oh, I forgot to mention during this 2 hour block of time that we now have, as of a couple of days ago, a brand new video on our website called The Two Stages of Aging. Absolutely, I say it's the best presentation we've ever done. Dr. Mixon, of course, talking about the two stages of aging and some of the new protocols we're now making available for our patients and only at Longevity Medical Clinic. It'll blow you away, folks. It will blow you away. Watch it. The Two Stages of Aging at lmclinic.com.